immense constitutional authority that is being turned against us. Thank you.
This is KBOO, KBOO Portland. You were just listening to a speech by Ralph Nader on the Project Censored show. He was speaking about his book, Breaking Through Power, It's Easier Than You Think, or something to that effect. At 11 o'clock here on KBOO, the radio zine will present gay rights attorney Elizabeth Schwartz and her book, Before I Do, in outlining the practical considerations couples should address before tying the knot. And then at 11:30, Talk Nation Radio brings you Richard Cahen on the forced removal and incarceration of Japanese Americans during World War II. Flashpoints is up next. It's 10 o'clock. First, we're going to listen to one important message, and then stay tuned for Flashpoints. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO today.
Give to KBOO today during our end-of-year match. Wrapping up December 31st, donations from all new and increasing members will be matched one-to-one up to $15,000 from the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems. Give an extra gift today or become a new member, and your membership will be doubled to support independent community media and citizen journalism at KBOO. Thank you.
Today on Flashpoints, we feature highlights from the recent Cannabis Cash and Public Banking Conference held in Santa Rosa, California. We'll feature interviews and speeches from this event. My name is Mike Biggs. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're here at Odd Fellows Hall in Santa Rosa, and we're at the Cannabis Cash and Public Banking Conference. And, well, I have a very special guest. Later on, we're going to be hearing our special guest, but I wanted you to introduce yourself. Tell us something about who you are, what you're doing here, and you could start by your name.
Sure. My name is Mark Armstrong. Good to be here, Dennis, and great to be up here in Santa Rosa talking with people about the importance of Santa Rosa as a gateway city to the six North Coast counties. The only way to do that, in my opinion, is to make it a financial center, and public banking fits perfectly into that, addressing in the short term the public issues associated with cash being transacted, and then long-term setting it up so the public bank is kind of the underlying economic driver to develop the economy in directions that we want, whether it's solar energy, renewable energy, as well as a healthy agriculture, et cetera.
Now, and this, what you're trying to do really essentially puts you, in a way, in direct conflict with the federal government, right? That's the struggle. That's why you have to construct a local community banking system, right? There's a problem here.
Yeah, the problem is not the idea of a public bank addressing this issue. The problem is that cannabis is state legal as of yesterday for recreational use for adults.
Congratulations.
But it is still illegal at the federal level, right. And banks being regulated at the federal level are very loath to be subject to the risk associated with handling cannabis money.
How big is that risk? What is that risk?
The risk is significant. What happens if there's a $10,000, $20,000 of cash that comes in and the teller accepts that, that teller is incurring all sorts of risk associated with accepting that cash into the banking system, and is at risk of prosecution. So, of course, banks don't want to put their employees into that kind of risk, and so public banking is one way to address this.
Let me ask you to just step back a moment and tell us a little bit about why you got involved in this and why you think this is significant at this time in history.
So my background, I used to work for IBM Finance here in San Francisco, and I worked with Wells Fargo and B of A, and I understood a lot of their applications. And then when the 2008 crisis hit, I'd been long gone from IBM at that point, but so when the 2008 crisis hit, I asked myself, how is money created? That was a topic for a lot of people because banks were in crisis. We had TARP at the time, and the question on the table was, how do we get into this mess? And so by just doing some research, I started looking at public banking models. We've got a great one here in the States, that being the Bank of North Dakota. And because I knew a lot about banking, I proceeded to help co-found the Public Banking Institute was the executive director for a number of years. So I understand the issue and the solution and enjoy talking about this because it does get to the heart of, you know, the question that everybody asks after we talk about good ideas like renewable energy or sustainable ag, whatever it may be. It's like, that's a great idea, but how are we going to pay for it? And so public banking is the answer to that question.
So this is a way to integrate and weave, you know, both this new, pun intended, budding industry that is huge with the community's growing needs for basic services, for, you know, this is a way to mingle this new crop and make it work for the people. Would that be a fair way to say it?
Right. It's a way for the city of Santa Rosa, if it were to open a public bank, to immediately address the cannabis cash issue of public safety. You know, you don't want to have people paying large bills with cash, and so it will immediately address that. The long term, which I think a lot of people share, is the whole idea of, okay, so now this new industry, relatively new industry, which could be larger than the wine industry, with Santa Rosa being at the gate, is the gateway to it. How can Santa Rosa effectively position itself so that it develops the industry the way we'd like it to? I mean, do we want to turn cannabis into a commodity and have it be a product which is controlled by Wall Street? Or do we want to have a number of locally produced growers who direct it into a different direction and enhance the culture as a result of that? So I think, and a public bank can play either role, but if you leave the financing to Wall Street, you know which direction it's going to go. You know, 20 years from now, the cannabis farms will be bankrupt because of interest payments being extracted out of this community. So what we want to do is protect our economy, and a public bank does that.
Wow. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're in Santa Rosa at Art Fellows Hall here. I'm getting ready to be a part of this cannabis cash and public banking. And we're speaking with Mark Armstrong. And how long have you been doing this? And do you ever worry that your connection with the marijuana industry, well, now it's legal here in this state, but that your connection, that your sterling career could be damaged by being associated? Is that a problem in terms of dealing with marijuana and, say, local banks, city officials? Are they afraid at that level?
Well, my perspective is more of a systems perspective. This is a really interesting problem to try to solve, and I'm happy to roll up my sleeves and get into this. And I think public banking and cannabis cash is a perfect match. It addresses a lot of the issues, as well as the long-term opportunity to establish Santa Rosa as a gateway. And so that's my perspective. It is legal now, and so I don't fear. There's no need to be concerned about whatever it may be. I mean, because it is a legitimate industry. It's just we're the people are way out ahead of the government in this case. We've proven it over the last few decades, and now with public banking, the same thing can happen where the people can take the lead and educate our government leaders as to how this can work for everybody's benefit and not for Wall Street's benefit.
What's the real problem? Have there been confrontations? Have people been hurt in terms of moving cash around? In other words, this is a real practical matter as well. I assume there are stories, too many stories, of various kinds of rip-offs and big problems that can come from that, the big cash.
Yeah, I mean, there. If you look at the crime report, there's a significant issue going on. In Colorado, there were literally hundreds of cannabis-involved robberies because of the cash just in the last couple of years. So, yeah, we've got to address this issue here in California. Now that Prop 64 has passed, it's something that we really do need to head off before it gets to be more of a problem than it already is.
Will this remain a problem even if the feds say, okay, we've had enough, pot's legal, we're taking it off... kicking it down. Does that change everything?
So if the DEA, which as recently as August, past August, reaffirmed cannabis as a Schedule I drug, if the DEA were to change its mind and reschedule it, then banks would be more open to addressing this issue. But I think we've been waiting for the federal government for decades now to make this change, and according to the returns yet last night, I don't think it's going in that direction of rescheduling. So, I think we need to do something at the local level.
All right. We're not even going to mention his name. I want to thank you. We're looking forward to hearing what you have to say, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Dennis.
Peace.
Bye, guys.
Okay, so I'll be talking primarily about cannabis cash and public banking. So the benefits are as follows. There's a number of short-term benefits. Of course, getting cash out of duffel bags that are in cars going up and down 101, of course that issue is going to be addressed, and that's a pretty short-term issue, and there's all sorts of public safety benefits associated with that. There will be a way to increase or turn on, because there is no public credit that's available right now, but turn on the public credit spigot. And I'll get into that later on. But certainly if Santa Rosa and this area started taxing the industry, there are ways to use a bank to ensure that the taxes are being paid and that they're all being captured to the extent that they should be taxed. What a public bank does is it prioritizes Santa Rosa's public interest as defined by Santa Rosans. So this next year, we're going to be doing weekly examples. There are plenty of these examples out there. If you want to be on our mailing list, go to publicbanking.org and just sign up. The reason why we're sending out these examples is because we want you to take these very easy to understand examples and get them in the hands of public officials who can better understand the impact of a public bank, how a public bank works. So whenever a budget is being determined in the public sector, there are different sources of revenues. It's tax and fee revenue, you float a bond, you sell assets. The state of California sold their state house and leasing it back. The state of Indiana sold I-80, which was an infrastructure project during the 50s under Eisenhower. They sold I-80, and now they're leasing that back. Chicago sold its parking infrastructure and to a Goldman Sachs consortium and are leasing it back. This happens again and again and again. You sell assets in order to get the money that you need to pay for different things. And most egregious is probably raiding the pots of money that had been set aside for transportation or whatever. But these are the narrow sets of alternatives that are in the headlines every other day. What North Dakota does is they have the same set of issues, but they also use their public credit. How much is that? $4.3 billion. They use that in order to fund the examples that I just went through, housing infrastructure, transportation, et cetera. So they just have another way to direct, nurture, and protect their environment and to ensure that it's not co-opted by Wall Street interests. A real concern, any elected official is concerned about risk, liquidity, and return with regards to investments. The one big point I want to make about this is if there was a public bank formed as a corporation, the corporation can be 100% owned by a public entity,
But the funding can come from issuing a corporate bond. Corporations issue bonds all the time. And so this would be called debt equity, which would be used to fund the public bank. This is not using taxpayer money. It's using just money that could be in the cannabis industry or elsewhere from people who want to buy these bonds. But ownership would be retained by the city. And then finally, the summary. Go ahead, next. Again, it's an implied partnership between the local government as well as federal government, shifting the compliance. Next, the shifting the compliance back to government. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is Dennis Bernstein, and well, we're up here in Santa Rosa, and there's a very special event taking place at Oddfellows Hall here. It's the Cannabis and Public Banking Conference. It's an interesting intersection of those who are have a great belief in public banking, and to deal with the issue of what do people do with all this cash, because no federal bank so far, or very few banks, are willing to get involved. And well, it's an interesting event, and well, let me ask you to introduce yourself, tell us who you are, and what brings you here to Oddfellows Hall.
Okay, my name is Ellen Brown, and I'm an attorney and author and founder of the Public Banking Institute. And I'm here to speak on public banking, and then Mark Armstrong's going to speak on the possibility of a cannabis bank that's publicly owned. So my part of the conference will be to explain why we need public banks, what a public bank is, how banking works, why we are basically getting ripped off by our current banking system, in which states, cities, and counties put their money in Wall Street banks, which then leverage that money for their own purposes. We could be leveraging it for our purposes.